NPR News, Beijing.
This is NPR.
Support for NPR comes from Sit for Less, selling all colors of the Herman Miller Aeron chair online, including Sit for Less True Black, online at sitforless.com.
News from NPR is made possible by a grant from Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors, offering pinch-proof doors, keyless digital entries, and lifetime manufacturer's warranties. Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors, serving businesses and families with professionally installed doors and automatic openers since 1959 in Ogden, Illinois. Support for today's broadcast comes from Community Blood Services of Illinois, providing all donated blood for patients in Champaign-Urbana, Charleston-Mattoon, Danville, and Effingham. There are no substitutes for donated blood. Blood donation takes 45 minutes and saves lives. Information at 367-2202 or on the web at bloodservices.org.
You're tuned to the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580 and 90.9 FM HD2. We're online at will.illinois.edu. Good afternoon. My name is Celeste Quinn. Thanks for joining us today. Well, do you remember the story of the War of the Worlds? It's a science fiction novel written in 1898 by H.G. Wells. It was made into a famous or infamous radio play by Orson Welles for Halloween in 1938. And then in 1953, Hollywood tackled it. Anyway, at the end of the story, the invading Martians are undone by our germs. So let's hear it then for germs, right? Our guest this afternoon is a medical scientist who has authored a book with, given the germ-busting tenor of our times, a rather surprising title, Why Dirt is Good: 5 Ways to Make Germs Your Friends. Our guest is Mary Rubush. We'll talk with her today about boosting our immune systems and staying healthy without going nuts with the antibacterial arsenal we're armed with today. Our guest is an associate professor of medical science at the Washington, Wyoming, Alaska, Montana, and Idaho Rural Health Research Center and Medical School. There she teaches medical genetics, microbiology, and immunology. Listeners, you can join the discussion this afternoon with your questions, comments. Join us with a phone call. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. We also have a toll-free number, that number 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Why Dirt is Good: 5 Ways to Make Germs Your Friends is published by Kaplan. 333-9455, 800-222-9455. Mary Rubush, good afternoon. Thanks so much for joining us today.
I'm delighted to be with you.
You say dirt is good. What exactly do you mean by dirt?
Well, I mean that general outdoor materials that children get into and come in from playing absolutely covered from head to toe in really simply keep your body understanding its environment, and it allows you to keep your immunological muscles, shall we say, in good and fit condition, so that when you are then confronted with something that could indeed cause disease, you have the wherewithal in your immunological arsenal to handle that infection and get well.
You tell readers that this dirt is good for you hypothesis is more formally known as the hygiene hypothesis, and it's an idea that's been around now for a couple of decades. How and why was it proposed?
Well, I believe that the original research that was done out of Great Britain said that they had observed, in looking at fairly large numbers of families and groups of humans living in certain places, that it did not correspond to the health of the society as a whole, that a particular society was unbelievably clean. And they found that once you got to the place of cleaning up the food sources so that there was not massive food contamination, and cleaning up water supplies so there was not sewage getting into the water, that beyond that, it seemed that cleanliness beyond that point actually tended to correlate more with societies that had very high degrees of allergy and autoimmunity. And this was quite a paradox for quite some time. But then they looked at the other half of the equation, that if you look at families and how many children there are, that it's fairly clear that as you have more and more children in a family, and therefore you are importing more and more colds and flus and so forth into the house, that those families with larger numbers of children actually developed a healthier life in the long run than those where one child was kept exceptionally clean. So their theory that they sort of threw out there to medical science was, is there a point beyond which cleanliness is actually deleterious to your health? And I would argue that based upon the way the immune system works, that it's really very clear that that would make sense. Because human beings have survived on this planet for millennia because of the fact that we have an unbelievably powerful defense against our environment. And if we weaken this sequentially over generations of humans by not exercising it and allowing it to get sick and get well and get stronger, then we really are creating a new generation of humans who will not have the wherewithal to protect themselves from fairly common environmental things. Then I would argue also that the flip side of the problem is that by using all of these harsh chemicals and antibacterials and so forth in our environment, we are actually encouraging the evolution of these microorganisms to defend themselves against our chemicals. So they are getting stronger and stronger and stronger, and I'm concerned that human beings are growing generations of weaker and weaker and weaker children immunologically.
This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guest this afternoon, Mary Rue Bush. And my name is Celeste Quinn, and listeners, you are invited to join us this afternoon to talk about dirt. Why Dirt is Good, Five Ways to Make Germs Your Friends is the title of our guest's book this afternoon. And let's take a call now from a listener in Urbana on line one. Hi.
Good afternoon.
Hi.
I'm calling because my family is from the old sod, and my dad always had a saying when my mom would bring us to the doctor, because he didn't believe in doing that. And he used to say, clean dirt never fattened a pig. And I think you can figure out what he meant by that.
That's exactly right. I would have to say that I agree with your father.
Yeah.
But it's perhaps counterintuitive because people, of course, want to protect their children from illnesses and so forth. But if you understand how the immune response works, it's not that unlike keeping your musculoskeletal system fit. You know, if you want six-pack abs, you can't get them by lying on the sofa and drinking beer and popping Cheetos. You have to be in a gym working or doing something physical. And your immune response needs exactly that same sort of stimulus, which is the act of eating dirt, exposing yourself to your environment, and keeping those immunological muscles strong.
Mm-hmm.
So I agree absolutely with your father.
Well, my mom had a saying that's the flip side that I'll just have to share with you, too. And hers was that cleanliness is next to godliness.
Well, I certainly heard that one as well. And I guess my only desire, I'm not a messy person, but I guess I would just like to temper out what seems to me to be an obsession in our society right now
mm-hmm.
by helping parents in particular to understand that it's not bad for their kids to come in from playing absolutely covered head to toe, you know, having, you know, stuck worms in their mouth, having done, you name it, what little kids will do. And I think it's a real demonstration of the design of the system. If you've ever watched a young child about the age of crawling, you know, they're like little Hoover vacuum cleaners.
Everything goes in the mouth.
Everything goes in the mouth. And what I was alluding to before with the multi-child family, you know, the first child is brought home, and the parents are so concerned about being good parents, and they have figured out at this point that children don't come with an owner's manual, so they're frantically trying to keep everything clean. By the time the third or fourth child comes around, you simply have let Mother Nature teach you that you cannot possibly keep up with those little fingers stuffing things in their mouth.
Mm-hmm.
And if you compare the child who was born first and kept unbelievably clean by sleep-deprived parents to the child who comes along fourth when the parents have, you know, physically given up simply because there's only so much you can do on 15 years of, you know, 5 minutes of sleep, for the fourth child, they're digging pacifiers out from under the refrigerator and sticking them in the child's mouth. And that child is going to be the healthiest child. That is going to be the child who does not have allergies, does not have autoimmune disease. So even though it might seem to persons to be counterintuitive, it is so important to understand that this is a natural evolutionary pattern that really needs to be respected.
Well, I tend to agree with you. I mean, my parents never really... My mom brought us to doctors as young kids, but as they aged, they just didn't believe in going to doctors for medical treatment. Now, my dad had, you know, diabetes and heart disease, so he didn't live very long past retirement. But my mom was 89 years old, almost 90, and she just stayed at home, refused to see doctors, took care of herself, supplemented with some vitamins and, you know, ate healthy. And
well, clearly you come from good genetic stock, I would have to argue. And I guess I don't want to have the message out there that I don't believe in physician-supported health care,
mm-hmm.
because I do feel that there are some cases where the physician has to make the decision of what to treat and or not to treat. But I do very strongly believe that if you have a good relationship with your physician, you can say to them, I generally do not approve of lots of treatments. Could we have a discussion in each illness about the fact of whether or not this is absolutely essential for the survival of my child, or if this is something my child will recover from and become stronger by the virtue of simply taking care of himself and, you know, getting sleep, drinking fluids, those sorts of things. So I don't want us to be too quick to treat absolutely every stub toe and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I believe there's definitely a place for physicians, and that, you know, that is the expert advice that you need when you're confronted with something that your child has that is really worrying you.
And thank you for your show. It's really, I think, timely.
Well, good. I'm glad you're enjoying it.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. One of my grandmothers was, she was a great fan of soap and water, just plain soap and water. And everything was clean, but she said, you know, you'll eat a peck of dirt before you die.
That's another one I've heard. It's a very old school. But there's so much wisdom in so many of these old dictums that it frustrates me sometimes that we seem to have moved so far away from what is common sense.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that's absolutely true.
Now, you mentioned the pacifier that found its way underneath the refrigerator and some young little tiny little hand finds it and pulls it out and plops it in its mouth, in his or her mouth. You know, that I wonder if part of the problem with over-cleanliness is the ick factor. You know, I wouldn't run it through the dishwasher, but I think I'd rather clean it off a little bit before it goes in to a tiny person's mouth.
Well, but think about where the ick factor is coming from. This is culturally trained.
Yeah.
Does Mother Nature want your child to look at that and say ick? No, obviously not. Mother Nature wants your child to look at that and put it in his mouth. So I think we have to sit back and look at these very, very strong primal urges that children have and ask ourselves, is this really that icky? I mean, is this something that is going to stunt my child for life? In the book, I tell a story that will probably have my son dying if he ever hears this, but we were building a barn out in back of our house here in Montana, and we had him on a blanket so he could watch, and he was beginning to crawl. And I turned around at one point while we were nailing away, and he had crawled over to a great big pile of dried horse manure. He had a piece of it about the size of a Big Mac in his hands and was chewing on it with unbelievable relish. And he had manure drool coming down his little fat cheeks, and happy, happy, happy baby.
What did you do?
Well, I mean, I sort of took it away from him, and I offered him a toy to chew on, but I didn't rush him into the house and wash his mouth out with Clorox or anything else, because being a microbiologist and an immunologist, I know that there's virtually nothing that he could get from horse manure other than one's own ick factor, as you described it.
Mm.
And every single exposure to things that are foreign to your own body makes your body stronger at recognizing them in the future. I have probably not had a cold or anything, an upset stomach, a headache, in 25 years, and I do absolutely nothing as far as medication. I take care of myself. I get an extraordinary amount of sleep, probably compared to most of your stressed-out listeners. They would listen to my 10 hours a night and go, oh, my goodness, I couldn't do that. But I really feel very strongly and that my job, which is helping medical students pass their certification exams, the medical boards,
mm-hmm.
I travel all the time, so I am either in an airplane, which, of course, Joe Biden does not recommend, or I'm in front of a class of students who are always overstressed and hacking and coughing and so forth, and I simply never get sick. I wash my hands with soap and water, and if there's no soap, I just rinse them in water. I believe that what you need to try to do with cleanliness is keep the level of germs down to a dull roar, because your body can learn from a small number of germs and defeat them. If you get a massive bolus of germs, then you're going to get sick, usually. But as I said, with absolutely no precautions, I simply never get sick.
Mm. Let's take another couple of calls. Next, we go to a listener in Champaign on line one. Hello.
Yes, good afternoon. While I've been waiting on the phone, you've covered some of the things that I was going to address, but I'll pursue it a little bit anyway. I was prepared to believe that horse manure would be relatively harmless, the way you were indicating, whereas fresh dog poop or cat poop probably was not, and day-old roadkill, pus on a discarded bandage. These would be things that even you would regard as not dirt in the sense of soil, but dirt in the sense of filth, and probably best kept away from everybody.
Well, in one sense, I do agree with you. There are certainly gradations of dirt launching into filth. However, let me simply throw out to you some extremely interesting research that's going on in the field that demonstrates that young children who have been exposed to the intestinal parasites of their pet dogs and cats by exposure, theoretically speaking, to the dog and cat poop you were talking about a second ago, those children develop immune responses that will negate the development of allergic hypersensitivities. And in order to understand that very strange juxtaposition, you have to understand that the reason why allergies exist, which makes so many of us in the United States miserable, is because of the fact that this particular immune response is the one that is supposed to be reserved only for defending the human against a parasite, a worm parasite. Well, what they are showing is that simple exposure to the parasites of animals, which cannot complete their life cycle in man, seems to jumpstart your immune response in that direction, so that you then develop that response only in a very focused and directed way. In other words, if you are exposed to a parasite that you need to attack. And it keeps children from developing allergies. So at least some degree of dog poop and cat poop is probably not bad for kids.
I had heard that there was research where the deliberate introduction of certain kind of parasites into adults that had terrible allergy problems was sometimes effective in alleviating those problems.
Absolutely. That's been very hot work right now. They're using a hookworm from swine, and it can't mature to adulthood in the human being, but it seems to reprogram your anti-parasite response so that it is reserved only against parasites and is not mounted against harmless things in your environment like pollen and dust and cat dander and so forth. So, yes, this is a very, very interesting area of research, which to me shows us the future of immunology. The understanding of how the system works is going to give us the preventive therapies in the future that will make our society so much more comfortable, because there is nothing more miserable than having these responses against things which are totally harmless in your environment.
Mm-hmm. But surely in the meantime, there's some sort of, well, you sort of acknowledged it, but didn't specify it, there's some sort of desirable limit to what one would allow the little toddlers to expose themselves to.
Yes, there is. And I guess I don't know how I would verbalize the drawing of that line. I tended to be a very laid-back mother with my children, and as I told you the manure story, most people, I'm sure, would have absolute heart attacks if that happened, and it just really did not worry me at all.
What sort of concerns do you have about the things that are in our environment now that were not there 100 years ago?
Well, certainly. I think that there are probably a large number of waste, environmental waste, chemicals and so forth,
yes,
that are predisposing us to injuries that then get our immune responses going against our own inflamed tissues. Not so much here in Montana, but I think in large cities, it's very hard to ignore that there must be chemical pollutants that are inhaled and available. And again, my strategy for keeping those down to a dull roar would be as much as possible, you know, washing in water. I don't think it's the chemicals that we put into soaps and so forth that help us. I think it's generally just the physical act of rinsing things off with water.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I don't... I wish I could be more responsive to your question and give you a guideline like, well, an inch long piece of cat poop is bad and a half an inch is okay. I really can't do that, and I really don't want to be pinned down in that way.
Right.
But I would like as a society for us to pull back from what seems to be an obsession with too much cleanliness.
Well, yes, and you, I think, are indicating that, along with rinsing things off as a way of cleaning, that staying away from many of the household cleaning products and also from things like herbicides and pesticides around
absolutely.
The house and garden.
Absolutely.
Thanks very much.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. Next, we take a call from a listener on a cell phone, line 2. Hi.
Good afternoon. I totally agree with your line of reasoning. Anecdotally, I am number 8 of 12, and I grew up in the 50s and 60s, and we kind of got to run a little wild in the neighborhood, and we weren't unknown to go to the neighborhood grocery store and the grate in front of the store that had the air conditioner. We would take ABC gum out of there, and in the summer we would pull it out and then, you know, go on our merry way chewing because we didn't have a penny for bubble gum. And our grandpa always brought us, we never bought processed food into the house. It all came from my grandfather's farm, as did our milk. It came from the morning milk into our house, and we drank it unpasteurized. You just had to stir it real fast and drink it because the cream was kind of...
would separate out.
Real good. Right, exactly. And all of my siblings, they grew up and are, as adults, very, very healthy. We don't have colds. We don't have flus. We don't have allergies. I just totally agree with that train of thought. I brought up my own girls. I didn't roll them in mud or anything, but I didn't get upset when they would go out and get a little dirty. I just believe that we have gone way too much with, you know, I see it with grandchildren that, you know, the mom gives them the, you know, the wipe, and it's an antiseptic wipe, and you have to, you know, have everything all clean. And I just think it's counterintuitive to what we should be doing.
I agree with you absolutely. And I was amused. One of the other things that one would think would predispose to allergies and so forth would be growing up in an environment when you're on a farm and you're exposed to all of these animal products and to all of the pollens. And yet, I dare say, if you look at your family, you probably do not have allergy in your family because of the fact that you managed to train your immune response properly from the beginning to ignore the things that need to be ignored and to fight the things that need to be fought. Mm. And that double edge to your immune response is so incredibly important to get trained properly as a child, which is why I'm especially worried about the next generation of children. An anecdote I can pass on to you. I was flying recently, and I can't remember where I was going, but an 8-year-old child who was traveling by himself was seated next to me, and the first thing this child did when he sat down in the airplane seat was get out a package of antibacterial wipes, which I'm certain had been given to him by his parents, and he sanitized his entire seating area before he got out a book. And I thought to myself, if we are doing this at this early age, we're headed down a pathway toward really dangerous thinking, in my opinion, because the weakening of the human immune response by itself is one problem, but the creation of these super bugs that we cannot kill with anything on the planet is unbelievably frightening. 94% of all hospital isolates are now methicillin-resistant Staph aureus. And we do not have the drugs, nor can we develop the drugs, to treat people who genuinely need help faster than these bacteria can mutate in order to protect themselves.
I want to thank the listener for her call this afternoon. Our guest is Mary Rubush. She is a medical scientist. She is the author of Why Dirt is Good, 5 Ways to Make Germs Your Friends. This is the Afternoon Magazine. My name is Celeste Quinn. Let's take another call now. Next, we go to a listener in Champaign on line 4. Hello.
Yeah, thank you. So I often wondered whether the whole ick factor was, were people just born that way? Was it genetic to find certain substances in that filthy, or was it cultural? And I read a book a while ago. It was a biography of Queen Elizabeth I, and she was having a state dinner sitting at the end of the big table, and a woman sitting next to her turned to her and said, "My, Your Highness, your hands are filthy." Now, in today's world, that would be considered, you know, an insult. You wouldn't say that at a state banquet. But the queen laughed and said, "Oh, that's nothing. You should see my feet." And I realized at that point that this whole it factor, finding all this dirt and everything so disgusting that so many people just freaks them out, it's totally cultural. It wasn't always that way. Now, obviously, maybe some things that we should be a little icked up, but quite right. The extent it is, it's completely overboard. I know a couple, and they refused to purchase a used house. They only move into a new house, one that no one else has ever lived in. So it can be a pretty expensive neurosis also.
Yes, it really can.
Well,
I'm hoping that if people can be taught to understand how their body works better, then it will become apparent how foolish this really is.
Yeah, I want to thank the listener for the call. We've got some other folks who are waiting for us. Let's go next to a listener in Champaign on line one. Good afternoon.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I wonder if your guest could talk a little bit about childhood immunizations and whether those immunizations are advisable, effective, necessary, that sort of thing.
Good question.
Thanks.
Okay.
Well, this always raises a thunderstorm of criticism and commentary when I say this, but I am a tremendous advocate of vaccination. If you understand what vaccination is doing, it is simply a means of artificially introducing the germ in a diminished strength so that your immune response can be taught to recognize the whole dangerous organism in the future. So in the cases of the vaccines that we now have for children, they are simply designed to give the child's immune response sort of a jump start so that they will begin to make the correct response and then defend themselves in the future. I feel extremely strongly that there is no credible scientific evidence that there is any association between vaccines and damage or danger to the child. I believe that a tremendous amount of fear and parental anxiety is foisted on the population with anecdotal stories of reactions of this sort and reactions of this sort and the development of severe dangerous problems afterwards. The vaccines that we have today have been in use for many, many decades. And, of course, there are very rare cases where an individual can develop an allergic response to something in the vaccine. But since vaccination is given in the context of a medical office with a medical professional watching and observing and looking at the result, I would have absolutely no qualms to recommend to every single parent that I know that they should benefit from the vaccinations we have today. I think it is often forgotten that in the past we had thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of children die of the diseases that we now protect against by vaccination. And because our generation of parents has not seen these diseases, it seems as though there are a tremendous number of vaccinations for things we haven't heard of. But there is an outbreak of measles in Europe right now. We have not seen measles for decades. And what people forget is that although measles itself is a childhood rash with a fever and a sore throat and so forth, there is the possibility for development of a very dangerous, fatal neurologic disease after the fact of measles. So the vaccines we have, I simply feel incredibly strongly that they are tremendously beneficial and need to be kept up.
Okay, I want to thank the listener for her call. Let's take another call. Caller in Urbana, line two. Hello.
Yes. I'd like your guest to address the fact that we're finding that the antibiotics that we have in our war chest today don't seem to match the viruses that we're trying to fight. How do you square your thinking with that kind of situation?
I'm not entirely certain I understand your question, but let me see
well,
if I...
Well, what I'm saying is that we're finding that the antibiotics that we're using today are not as effective as they used to be.
Okay.
Does that not say that the germs that we're encountering today are of a higher...
virulence?
Yes.
Danger? Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Absolutely. The reason, however, that the germs we're dealing with today are more dangerous than those of the past is because they are living creatures just like us. And because we have grown them in these soups of antibiotics and chemicals, they have been forced to mutate to survive. So it is our fault that they are getting more dangerous because of the fact that we are forcing them to do so. If we were to back off from the use of the chemicals, from the use of as many antibiotics, for the reservation of antibiotics and other antimicrobics for periods of time when they are absolutely necessary for the recovery and survival of the patient. If we did that, then over time, these organisms, these bacteria, viruses, and so forth, would revert back to not possessing these genetic materials that cause them to be resistant to us. So it is our fault that we have caused them to mutate, and I agree with you absolutely. We cannot keep up with the rate at which these organisms can mutate. They go through generations in a number of minutes. I believe the generation time for a human being in the United States is 27 years. So there's no way that we can develop antibiotics as quickly as they can mutate to avoid them.
Does that answer your question, sir?
I think so.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Okay. You're very welcome. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guest this afternoon is Mary Rue Bush, and she is an associate professor of medical science at the Washington, Wyoming, Alaska, Montana, and Idaho Rural Health Research Center and Medical School. She teaches medical genetics, microbiology, and immunology. She is the author of Why Dirt is Good, Five Ways to Make Germs Your Friends. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, we have about 10 minutes left in this portion of the program. If you've got a question or a comment, join us with a telephone call, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area, and toll-free, 800-222-9455. As we confront the latest strain of influenza, H1N1, here's some of the advice we're given. Wash your hands well with soap and water. Keep dirty hands away from your eyes, nose, and mouth. If there's no soap, no water on hand, use a hand sanitizer. If you've got a cough or sneeze, do that into your elbow. What do you think of those things that we're being told today by public health folks?
Well, I think obviously when you're facing a pandemic of disease, as this new H1N1 is arising, one is forced to sort of up the ante on those things which one knows are associated with the transmission of disease. Here we clearly have a disease agent to humans that's transmitted by respiratory droplets when people sneeze and cough and so forth. So in my opinion, these are simply common sense approaches to trying to keep yourself, keep the level of exposure down. I do think that there has been a little bit more hysteria, it seems to me, about
the advent of this new strain of virus. And I think it's important to keep in the back of our minds that these sorts of genetic changes in viruses, particularly influenza, have been happening since time began. And so what has happened, I think, to us now, because of the extreme increase in our ability to hear the news as it is happening by the moment in very far-flung countries away from us, I think that we need to retain a perspective about the fact that influenza simply does this regularly. It gets in cells with animal influenza virus particles, and they sort of join together and mix up their genetic information and thereby create new strains. And epidemiologically, what our public health people do every year is try to give a best guess of what the strain is going to be for that given year. So I guess, again, I would just sort of like people to ramp down a bit their concerns. Not that this was not an evolving health issue that should have been covered, but to remember that this is something that is quite natural, quite normal, and as we've seen, as we've watched this, the great majority of exposed people do not die. The great proportion of exposed people develop a flu-like illness and recover, and in so doing are stronger.
We've got a number of people waiting to talk with you this afternoon, so let's go ahead and take another call. Listener in Chicago, line 4, hello.
Thank you. How do you view the area of homeopathy that seems to be a practice that was prevalent before all the pharmaceutical companies came online, and this discouraged it? The royal family in England still uses it, and other people throughout the world, India, where they don't have the hospitals and clinics and other things available. It seems to be a first aid thing for dealing with things. How do you view homeopathy?
Okay.
I would have to answer that by saying, first of all, I am not a pharmacologist, and so I would refer questions of most homeopathic medicines to someone who could tell me what truly were the active ingredients inside them, because I'm concerned that many things that are sold over the counter in this way, one really doesn't know what's in them. That said, I think there is a tremendous amount of value in old-style remedies for a variety of things that simply allow your body to heal itself. And so although I do not personally use homeopathy to the negation of any other sort of medicine, I certainly try to keep an open mind about things that I try that seem to work for me. If that happens, I then perhaps pursue trying to find out what is in them and why they might be working. And I think there is just an unbelievable amount of ancient wisdom out there that comes from the plant kingdom all around us that we haven't tapped into yet.
Let's take another call. Listener on line 1. Hi. Line 1, Urbana. Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
I grew up in the 50s and played in the stream. I know some septic systems emptied into and all that kind of stuff. But I've been a hospital employee involved in patient care for over 30 years. And, you know, a few years back we went to this thing where you have to treat every patient as if they're have some kind of a virus or germ that can be transmitted to you there. And I noticed particularly in students coming through, they're afraid to touch even a walkie-talkie outpatient without putting on a pair of rubber gloves. And, you know, it's just, there's got to be some common sense here. You know, I basically learned that, you know, if things are wet and damp, you know, that's the kind of areas you have to be concerned about transmitting something there, or maybe coughing in your face. You know, we go two different ways here. You know, I agree with you that it probably children, the fact that, you know, I was exposed to a lot of things has given me a lot of resistance later. And we're making everybody so afraid to even touch another person now. It bothers me there because I think there's something involved in medicine in the human touch still.
And I do agree with you. I would have to say that I'm sure you have this in your question, that in a hospital where you have persons who you know to be ill, that's why they're in a hospital, there clearly have to be precautions that are different than those precautions that happen in everyday children playing, you know, out in drainage ditches like you were talking about. But at the same time, I agree with you that this thought that you can't even touch someone is really, it's disturbing. At the least, it's disturbing. And I would think if I were a practicing medical professional, that would be particularly distasteful to me because of the fact that I do believe that human contact is terribly important for all things.
I want to thank the listener for the call. We've got to wrap it up here, and I thought to do this, we've had a request that we run down your rules for leading a long and healthy life, and so we'll have to kind of give an abbreviated version of this. But rule one, let them eat dirt. Exposure to dirt helps kids build strong immune systems. Rule two, use it or lose it to work as well as possible. Your immune system needs exercise, just as the rest of you does. Three, don't encourage superbugs. Avoid
antimicrobics,
thank you, such as antibacterial soap. Don't use those things. Keep your vaccinations up to date. Always ask first, what would Mother Nature do? Save drugs for when they're really needed. Mary, thank you very much for talking with us this afternoon.
Thank you. It was my pleasure.
Mary Rubush is the author of Why Dirt is Good, 5 Ways to Make Germs Your Friends. The publisher is Kaplan. It's 1:53. Settlement prices should be in now from Kansas City and Chicago. Here with those numbers, Todd Gleason.
Thanks much, Celeste. Taking a look at the numbers as they settled in Chicago on a Thursday afternoon. Futures like this. Wheat futures were higher. September at 5:31.75, up 9.75 with a high of 38.75, a low at 5:20. December soft red at 5.65.75 top, bottom at 5.47.25. Settled 10 cents higher at 5.59. And July of 2010, up 9.5 cents to settle at 5.99.25 in the soft red winter wheat pit. From Kansas City, the hard red settled 6.75 higher at 5.61.5. From the corn pit in Chicago, a 19-cent gain today, 3.27.75 the high, the low at 3.11.5, settlement price at $3.27, finished 19 cents higher. The gains kicked off last night when the National Agricultural Statistics Service told us that it was going to update the corn acreage survey in August from 7 different states, including Illinois. December futures, 19.5 cents higher in the corn pit, 3.39.75 the high, the low at 23.5. Settlement price at 3.38.75, up 19.5 in the March. 3.53 the high, the low at 36. Settled 52.25, up 19.5 cents. May futures from the corn pit, 3.62.75 the high, the low at 3.46.75. Settlement price at 3.61.5, 19 cents higher in July futures. 3.71.5 the high, the low at 3.53.25. Settled 370, up 18.75. September oat futures, 202.5, up 3.5. From the soy complex, nearby August beans today, 10.37 the high, the low at 10.18. Settlement price at 10.23.5, up 5. September, 9.69.25 the high, the low at 9.46.5. Settled 9.61.5, up 16.5. In November soybeans, 9.36 the high, the low at 9.10. Settlement price at 9.32, up 24. January futures, 9.42.5 the high, the low at 9.18.5, settlement price at 9.39.25, up 24.5 in the March contract, 9.47.75 the high, the low at 25, settlement price at 9.43.5, up 23.25. While NAS did not say it would update the soybean number, that's a foregone conclusion. NAS always updates all the acreage numbers in the soybean August August crop production report. Happens each and every year. Now, August bean meal futures, 3.26.50 the high, the low at 3.21, settlement price at 3.23, up $2. And the August soybean oil, $35. The high, the low at 34.26, settlement price at 34.67, up 15. We'll talk about what NASA's doing during our closing mark report this afternoon. Comes up at 6 after the hour of 2 o'clock, which is now 10 and a half minutes away. I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Kathy Ferguson in Morris at 815-941-3758. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
Prices lower today overall at the Mercantile Exchange in Chicago, the exception being the live cattle contracts. August live cattle, the high 85.40, the low 84.80, the settlement 85.02.5 unchanged. October, 90.42.5, the high 89.77.5, the low, the settlement 90.10, that up 30. December, 90 even, the high 89.22.5, the low, the settlement 89.92.5, up 57.5. February, 89.25, the high 88.40, the low 89.02.5, the settlement, that up 55. August feeder cattle, 103.10, the high, 102.30, the low, 102.37.5, the settlement, down 75. September, 102.95, the high, 102.07.5, the low, the settlement, 102.10, that down 65. October, 103.05, the high, 102.35, the low, the settlement, 102.45, down 57.5. November, 102.95, the high, 102.15, the low, 102.40, the settlement, that down 60. August lean hog, 61.70, the high, 59.90, the low, 60.95, the settlement, that down 115. October, 57.20, the high, 55.60, the low, finishing at 56.40, down 92.5. December, 56.95, the high, the low, 55.85, the settlement, 56.20, down 120. February lean hogs, 62.42.5, the high, the low, 61.60, the settlement, 62.17.5, down 60. And August pork bellies, 64.25, the high today, 62.80, the low, finishing at 63.30, that down 125. The Dow is currently up 200 points at 9,081. The NASDAQ is up 49 at 1975. The S&P 500 up 23 at 978. Crude oil, nearby month in New York, trading up 176 at 67.16.
Support comes from the Westchester Group, specializing in land auctions for farmland, timberland, and recreational land. More information on upcoming auctions is available online at westchester-auctions.com.
How is the recession affecting your community? Tonight at 7, WILL and its community partners are hosting public conversations about the economy in Danville and in Rantoul. For location information, visit willconnect.org/economy or call 217-333-7300. 1 minute before 2 o'clock, this is Illinois Public Media, WILL 580 AM and 90.9 FM, HD2 and HD3 Urbana, online at will.illinois.edu. Mike Sola's forecast for Illinois and Indiana this afternoon, partly to mostly sunny with widely scattered showers and isolated thunderstorms. Highs ranging from 73 in northeastern Indiana to 83 in the far south and in southwestern Illinois. Tonight, partly to mostly cloudy, lows from 57 in northeastern Indiana to 63 in southwestern Illinois. And the outlook for tomorrow, partly to mostly sunny, highs ranging from 81 in eastern Indiana to near 90 in southwestern Illinois. This afternoon in Champaign-Urbana, partly to mostly sunny, the high near 80. Tonight, partly cloudy, the low 60. Tomorrow, partly sunny, the high 86. The outlook for Saturday, mostly cloudy and breezy with showers and thunderstorms likely early in the day, then a chance for